Welcome back, man. If you have been a regular follower of this podcast, you undoubtedly noticed that we've missed a few weeks. Let me personally take some responsibility for that. My name is Glenn Singer, the former men's ministry leader at Morningstar Fellowship, and we've turned over the reins of power, so to speak, to a new fellow by the name of Scott Baker. And while this transition is going on, I have to say that probably I have dropped the ball a little bit on ensuring you that there are regular updates and regular weekly podcasts for you to listen to. This week, I hope, will be the start of getting us back on track. Again, let me apologize for the weeks that we've missed. So would you please continue to check in week over week, and hopefully we're going to get this back on track for you. Today's topic is going to be a little bit off course. For a few weeks now, we've been considering points from Pat Morley's book, How God Makes Men. This morning, we're going to look at some basic practices for personal care. How and why do we care for ourselves personally? How do we make that a meaningful custom, which we'll talk about, a meaningful even tradition that we pass on to our children? How do we make times of family interaction where we talk about spiritual things and make sure that we keep our lives on track and focused on the right things? How do we make those times meaningful and understandable and even desirable, so that we look forward to those times and we notice when they're missing, so that even our children look forward to those times and seek them out? Remind us, as a matter of fact, if we're not on top of that, remind us, hey, Dad, we've missed this to getting together and talking about some spiritual things today. So follow along for the morning. Again, please accept my apologies for the lapse, and look forward to meeting with you each week from now on again. Thank you. Okay, so this is a one-time event. I told Scott I'd fill in for him once after I got back from a few weeks away. And actually, the reason that I volunteered to do this morning was just discovering some things, or rediscovering some things, the result of being away, traveling a little bit. We're going to get into that in a moment. Before we do that, though, over the past couple of weeks, both talking with Scott, talking with some other guys, listening to some comments, I've heard this common theme. It would be great to have more interaction. It would be great to have more participation on Saturday morning. Now, y'all do a great job of talking on the sideline. I have no idea what you're talking about. If you're talking about the snow or you're talking about what you had for dinner last night, I have no idea. But I think the general thrust is it would be great to have more interaction with the material and with each other on a typical Saturday morning. Now, I don't know if that's true for all of you, that you want that, or if some of you feel you're getting enough of that, but I thought it would be helpful to just talk about a few things that might contribute to a better level of interaction. So here's the first thing, and I'm going to say this as delicately as possible. Everybody has an opinion about something, but that doesn't mean that that qualifies you to be a resident expert on something. So the fact that you think something about, well, for instance, has anyone here ever listened to someone share their idea on something? And we'll take it off Bible. Has anyone just ever listened to someone share their opinion on something and said, well, that's just weird? How could anybody be so...
Sometimes it was my own opinion.
How is that possible that somebody could be so uninformed that they would actually believe that? So the fact that you think something doesn't mean that it's always worth sharing. As a matter of fact, I think it would be safe to say that there are times when we're all glad when some people do keep what they're thinking to themselves. But beyond that, there does come a time when we want to have interaction. First, we want to hear from God. I think that's the top rung here on this ladder. We want to make sure that we're hearing something solid from God. But in order to do that, it's probably sometimes helpful if we hear from each other. Have you ever come to understand something of God in a whole new light because you listened to somebody else's understanding about it? Sure, we all do. Because we all understand something of God, but we all understand God incompletely. One of the ways that we understand God is through how He interacts with us in everyday life. So, Bill's experience with God, different than John's experience with God. And so when we each contribute something in a group conversation, it can help us to get a more complete, more full understanding. Has anyone here ever been encouraged by hearing what God is doing in someone else's life? Of course. Sometimes we come in here very discouraged, very down, and what somebody else says helps us. So the right comment made in the right way at the right time can be beneficial. Don't negate the value of... Here's another stumbling block. Well, I'm not sure I understand enough. I'm not sure I know enough. Therefore, I can't contribute. That's not always true. One of the things that guys tend to do is they hide behind what they say. And what I mean by that is we talk because when we talk, it makes it sound like we know something. As opposed to... when we ask questions, it reveals what we don't know. And what I find is that a lot of men are uncomfortable, at least initially, with really revealing what they don't know. They'd rather talk about what they do. One of the ways in which we help each other to grow when we interact with material is by saying, okay, well, I tried that, but I failed. Or I'm not even sure I get that whole thing. What are they talking about? I'm amazed at how many times when one person opens up and asks a question, half the room felt the same way. It just took one person to open up and say, I really struggle with that. So, we'll give you a totally off-field topic here. Right? If anyone were brave enough to broach the subject of lust, everybody would go quiet and say, well, they wouldn't say anything. They'd listen to me talk. Because after all, I'm the expert. I mean, not on lust. Well, yeah, maybe too. And when it was all said and done, they'd just be quiet. But if one guy opened up and started to talk, well, here's where I struggle, here's when I struggle, here's why I struggle, all of a sudden, the room would be filled with conversation. So sometimes it only takes one person's comment to just get something started. So, here's a couple of pointers if you want better interaction. Because next week, Scott's going to be back up front, back in charge. And I think, well, no, I know Scott would like more selective interaction from you. So here's the first step. Come prepared. How many of you have your best thoughts about what you've heard here 3 hours after you leave here? Why is that? How many of you have your best answer for someone who is a critic of Christianity 2 hours later in the car while you're on your way somewhere? Oh, I should have said that. Over a period of time, as you become better versed with something, you're able to have meaningful conversation with them and good answers for something on the spot. So the more time you invest up front in preparing to be here, the more fluid and fluent you will be able to be as you interact with the material. So come prepared. Now that doesn't mean that if you didn't prepare, not to show up. By all means, show up anyway. Alright. Next one. Allow the material to reveal who you are. Just let it cut into you. Last week we talked about Moses. What did you learn about yourself? If you were here last week, what did you learn about yourself as a result of evaluating the life of Moses?
And you need to wait on God.
Okay. Anything else? Does anyone ever... Yes?
You all struggle with humility.
Help me understand what you mean there.
We always think that we know the best way and how it our way that we approach things is the best. We've got lots of time to run out in front of God. And then we smack in the face and say, oh, that's the devil. We humble ourselves and use another opinion.
Okay. Here's another great one. I go out and I do something, and I think I'm going to do what God wants me to do, and I go out and do it, and it doesn't work. And then I have to leave doing that and go off and I go do something else in some obscure place, and I'm not really sure what I'm doing, and I think that everything that I have tried to do thus far is wasted and over. You know, God didn't waste one moment of Moses' first 40 years. He didn't waste one moment of Moses' second 40 years. But I'll guarantee you, Moses was having a lot of second guessing about himself for that whole time. Well, here's what I like to say. Those guys lived their lives here on earth. So we study their lives not to become experts in the facts of their lives, but because there is so much that is common to the human experience that when we look at the biblical figures, we can see ourselves in the story. So every week, as Scott takes you through this material, place yourself into the story in such a way that you feel the humanness of it. Feel the fear. Feel the passion. Feel the desire. Feel the craving to do something great, whatever it is. All right. Here's another one. We're trying to allow some time afterward for you guys to have some conversation at the table. Now, it's easy for men to gravitate toward, we'll call it, silly conversation. Right, in 5 minutes' time, you go from talking about something deep to talking about what you're going to, I don't know, what you're going to have for lunch or something like that. Now, I'm sure that's an important topic for conversation, but you're here, so focus on something important. What do you want to clarify? What would you like to talk about with a couple of guys and say, you know, this is what I would like to do this week? Because see, if you don't leave here with a plan for how you're going to use what you learn, you may as well have just slept in. At least you'd be less cranky because you'd had a few more hours of sleep. So if you have no intention of doing something with what you learn, why show up to learn it? And the reality is that most of us will not do what we promise that we're going to do because we don't take enough time to make a plan for doing it. You ever made a promise to God, to your wife, to your kids, you were going to do something and then you fell through on it? A lot of times it's because you never put in place a realistic plan for actually accomplishing it. Four guys at a table, that's a great place for you to start to talk about how would I do something this week. Maybe pray for each other. Maybe actually go so far as to say, hey, let me get your cell number. I'll check in with you this week. Or you can check in with me. Now, I know we encourage that, and I know that I don't want to beat that to death, but still, do you find that by Wednesday or Thursday you need a reminder of what you said you were going to do on Sunday? I know I do. As a matter of fact, I'd be so honest as to say I need a reminder on Monday morning to follow through on what I said I was going to do on Sunday night. Because we get busy. Life just works its way into us. So if you make a commitment as a result of something you learn about yourself that you would like to do something different in your life, ask for some help. Ask some guys to work with you on that. Travel the road together. All right. Let me see if there's anything else I want to say about that. Yeah, here's another one. Share what you learned. Your kids are a great place for that when they're young. If you learn something, it becomes more real as you start to share it with other people. So you take a great idea, you discover something new about God, you discover something new about yourself, you discover what God is calling you to do, and you keep it to yourself. But it doesn't work well that way. If you start to share that with others, as you re-converse about that, it becomes more real to you while you're helping someone else to understand it. Now, they say this all the time, and it's so true. John could validate this for sure. Those who teach get more out of the topic than those who sit and listen. They just spend more time interacting with it. So if you want something that you have learned to become more real in your own life, find people to share it with. All right. Questions? Comments? This is your turn. Yeah, that interaction thing, Scott, it's not working so well for me either, so don't feel bad.
Come back in about 2-3 hours.
All right. I'm going to send 2 pieces of paper around. Because the one with the small print on it is probably going to get discarded, I don't know, by the time you get home. There's one with bigger print on it that maybe you'll hang on to. I really hope you will. So let me tell you what we're going to do for the morning and why we're going to do it. From time to time, I have to travel. Some of you may travel. And I travel for work, and when I travel for work, I have a busy day. Get up, I got things to do. I mean, it's cost a lot of money for me to get somewhere, to stay somewhere, and I have a full day of things planned. Now here's where I say this is exactly like you. It's not as if when I go away somewhere and do the things that I need to do while I'm away, that everything that is waiting for me at home just goes away. In other words, at the end of the day of doing everything that I need to do while I'm away, there still might be 3 or 4 hours of business work that wasn't attended to, because it's not as if I was sitting on my hands doing nothing when I was here in Quakertown. And all that is to say that traveling for me gets to be really stressful after a while because there's just so much to do. And whenever there's that much to do, all the good routines that I have in place in my life start to fall apart. Change, sometimes, radical change, can be the enemy of good, solid routines. You've all experienced that. You get into a new environment, you go on vacation, you do something, anything different, and it tends to throw all of your routines out of kilter. So here's the question that I started to pose, and maybe you've experienced this yourself. All right. For one day, I don't do the personal care practices that I should. And I can coast for a day. You can coast for a day. But then a second day goes by, and I don't engage in some of the personal care practices that I should. Now would be a good time to stop and say, do you understand what I mean by personal care practices? And I really intentionally want to challenge us all. You know those phrases like devotionals and quiet time and all that? Just leave them wherever you found them. Why? Because they don't fully express what we are desiring. Because what we desire out of those devotional times, or out of those quiet times, what do we want? We want to care for our inner man and reconnect with God. So why don't we just call it what it is, because it'll remind us of why we do it. Why does anybody have a devotional? I don't know, but I know why I need personal care practices. And if I ever forget why I need them, everyone around me will very quickly understand why I need them. They'll help, they'll encourage me to get back to my personal care practices. And that's exactly the next point. After a couple of days, my attitude suffers. I could be short with people in the checkout line. I could be free to express my opinion about what I think about them in traffic. I could do other things that would express exactly what I'm thinking about them in, believe it or not, unchrist-like ways. And so I start to feel that need to remind myself of who I am and why I choose to live the way I do. Here's the challenge. And we already dealt with that. How do I do that and still do everything that I need to do in a day? And if you're a husband, and if you're a dad, you not only have your own personal care practices that you're responsible for, but if you have especially younger children, you're probably going to want to steer and guide them into helping to develop some personal care practices of their own. Or you're going to be responsible for some family care practices. How do I do that given the chaos of life? So let's stop here and ask the obvious. How many of you feel stressed and pressured and there isn't enough time to care for yourself the way you would like to? Okay, so we have one honest man in the room. Okay, getting a second. See how this works? One guy raises his hand, then a second, and the rest of you, you're all liars. That's the way it is. Everybody struggles with this from time to time. How long has it taken you to develop some sort of routine that works for you? Those of you who have some sort of a routine. Does it come naturally? Years? Okay.
I think it's always evolving.
All right. How many of you think it's easy for your kids? How many of you think they even think about it? Where are they going to learn it? I must have talked with three or four guys this week alone. They just move out into their day. That's how they do it. No thought. They wake up in the morning. I don't know. Turn on the radio. Watch the news. Whatever they do. Make their coffee. And out the door they go. I don't even want people to be around me if that's the way I start my day. Because I know the kind of person that I am when I start my day that way. Take a look at the world around you. Does the world around you give evidence of thousands, perhaps millions of people who start their day that way? Without any conscious thought in advance as to how they will choose to behave throughout the day and why? That makes us all a bunch of ticking time bombs, ready to react as opposed to respond to every stimulus that comes into our life. So I really want us all to feel this. We don't put personal care practices into our lives because it's the Christian thing to do. We don't do it because Jesus said so. We do it for our own good health, for the good of community, and because it keeps us in connection with God. Isn't that what we want? I don't think we approach this the right way. I think we somehow still believe that a lot of us that we're just making God happy. That God smiles a little more brightly when we read the Bible before we go to work. Now, I'm telling you, I need this. And so does every one of us. And I'm telling you, your workplace needs this. What if you're the only guy on your crew? What if you're the only person in your workplace who has made a conscious choice to start his day with purpose in mind? What if you're the only guy who has made a conscious choice to pray for coworkers in advance of entering the workday? Do you want to not do that if you're the only guy that's doing it? Do you see what I'm saying? You have no idea the level of contribution that you can make. I don't know the level of contribution that I can make. Let me just read a couple of words from a song that really kind of like describes this. And it's an old song, but it's been revitalized by a blues singer. And he says, "Well, the sun is up and rising and the wagon's headed west. Now, I can't shake that old suspicion that I've settled for second best. I've been frugal at the table. I've been conscious. I've been blind. Whoever said 40 acres and a mule would keep me satisfied." So here's a guy who's left one kind of toil, and he's headed out because he thinks there's some other opportunity. But what he's really saying is wherever he is, he finds no peace because he's not ever quite sure that he's doing the right thing. You ever felt that way? I'm at work and I think I should be home. I'm at home and I think I should be at work. And no matter where I am, somehow I think somebody else wants something from me and I'm just not enough and I can't give enough in a day to make everybody happy. Who hasn't felt that? Where does peace to that dilemma come from? This is a good point for interaction. Do you want to spend the rest of your life living that way? Who hasn't lived that way for a day or two? A week or two? Do you feel that right now some days when you wake up? Do you want to spend the rest of your life feeling that? When Jesus promises us a rich and a full life, is that the best it gets? No matter where I am, I think it should be somewhere else. No matter what I'm doing, I think it's not quite enough. What's the solution to that? Let me ask you another question before we move on. Do you know who you are and why you're here? Do you know what has to fall away so that the things that you are here to do get done? Are you at peace with who you are and your mission in life? And if you're not, where in the world does that ever come from? Let's come back to the personal care practices. If you don't spend time every day refreshing yourself as to what your purpose in life is, you know, you could go through your whole life and waste it. Never be at peace. Never accomplish what you were here for. And then what? Wouldn't it be worth spending time every day figuring this all out? Reminding yourself of it? Because how easily we forget. I'm just telling you, even if I know what my purpose is, I forget pretty quickly. Maybe I'm a little more retarded than some of you, I don't know, but I can get sidetracked. No, I'm not. Or I'm beyond hope. Never mind. So here's what I know happens. We can start out the morning with the best of intentions and want to live on purpose, but we enter the stream of busyness. Your attention, your focus, follows your activity. You know what I'm saying? Your attention and your focus follows your activity. And over a period of time, so like, here's your purpose, but yet here's what you're frantically doing all day long. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about your purpose all day long? Or are you thinking about your activity? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because this is really rich stuff that every one of us needs to come to terms with. In the moment by moment of my life, my gaze, my attention, my mental focus follows my activity. So if I haven't spent time in the morning making sure that I am on the right activity, then I'll waste my life. I'll waste my day anyway. It is absolutely essential that I plan for how I am going to live my day, or my day will hijack my life. Who here hasn't started out and said to God, I'm going to serve you faithfully and well today. I'm going to be a good example of you today. And by noon, you can look back and see how you failed. Does that happen to you? Happens to all of us. So we're busy and we acknowledge it's always difficult to find time for personal care. And so my hope is that these, and I was struggling with that a couple of weeks ago. And I only had a few minutes to think about what is important and how do I want to live this day? What do I want to make sure I have been or have thought or have given this day? And so I just started to put down some things here. And I hope that they're going to be helpful. And the idea is that maybe you spend a few moments interacting both with yourself and these questions, share some of them with your wife, and then even help your kids. And I think some of these questions or statements are really good to work through with your kids. Before we do that, though, I want to talk to you about customs and traditions. What's a custom? When I say the word, anything come to mind?
A set of practices that develops over time,
Ooh, can you, do you remember what you said? Can you repeat it again?
Set of practices that develop over time and becomes ingrained in
our culture. Okay. That's actually good.
It is.
That's very good. Customs are first generation. Over a period of time, those customs become traditions. So what is a tradition? A tradition occupies a place on the calendar or a place on the clock. And it's something that over a period of time, people start to notice it's missing if it's not done. So in everyone's life, there's something like, do you have Christmas traditions? Most people do. Certain other traditions, I don't know, maybe some of you go to a particular vacation spot every year in a certain week or whatever it is. Every family has traditions. But over a period of time, has anyone here ever experienced the, boy, Christmas went by and it's just like, it's gone and I don't even notice, or it just wasn't there. So there's times when traditions become dead. We have some customs in this church. Anybody want to name any? Think of some? Okay. Very specific, very unique, because customs and traditions are, just like you said, they become ingrained in the culture. They are unique to each culture. One thing that John does, and I can remember first time I came here. This is my... Go on. I can do what it says I can do. When I read in here, faith... I boldly, my mind is, my heart is, I'm about to, the incorruptible, ever living, oh, got me, yep. And I will, there you go. Is that an important custom if it's taken seriously week by week? Is it powerful if you stop to think about it every time you say it? Show of hands, how many of you have ever parroted those words and not thought about them on a Sunday morning? John would probably put his hand up, but it would be to him.
I've done it about 20 years now. I can remember the first time I did that. I didn't plan to do it every week. And after the first time I did that, it was probably during that week, I thought, I'm going to do this again. And then my head says, I think we should do, myself, I should do this every Sunday. We should just consciously receive God's word. That I can remember that.
Now what happens in all of our lives, we've all experienced this, you start something and it's a good practice, but over time it just gets to be something that's a point in the clock, a moment in the calendar, and I just do it and I go through the routine. And sometimes, as a matter of fact, a lot of times I hear men suggest that what I'm calling personal care practices have become just that. Well, I heard a sermon or I read something in a book and it reminded me that I should do that, and so I've decided to wake up 15 minutes early. All right, how's that work for you when you're already waking up at 5:30 in the morning? I decided to wake up at 5:15 in the morning, so while I was fresh and alert, I would get into God's Word and that would prepare me for the day. And how'd that work? And on day two, it was 5:30 again when you woke up. And So remember, your customs that you hope will become traditions need to be done in a way that work for you. Now, I mentioned what John did, but 8 years ago, just a little glimpse into how things change, 8 years ago, John would hold up a Bible. John does it slightly differently today. What does he say today? Yeah, why? Because times have changed, things have changed, and so he has had to adjust the way he introduces it to accommodate the change. Now that's a small and almost silly example. What do you need to do to adapt and adjust so a custom doesn't just become a meaningless ritual?
Can I just interject? Things do change, because I can remember, I don't know, a couple years ago, I don't know, but somebody said something about somebody... Well, they're in church and they're looking at their phone all time, looking at their phone. And they found out and they said they're looking at their Bible.
Yeah.
They have their Bible on their phone. That's like beginning to change just a few years ago.
So just remember that our goal is not just to mechanically go through the motions of something. Your goal is first for yourself. You can't help anybody else until you can first help yourself. Don't attempt to lead your family and be the great priest of your family until you can care for yourself. Because as you learn to care for yourself well in a way that matters, you will start to experience, you'll appreciate the challenges. And you'll be sensitive to their challenges. So when your kids start to get itchy and squirmy and bored and they don't want to do this, you'll understand. Okay, their problem might be boredom. Your problem was lack of sleep. Everybody has challenges to this. Be a sensitive priest in your home. So what we're going to do first, before we get into these 10 things, and I have a list of 10 things that I think are worth remembering on a daily basis, but before we do that, the first thing I want to encourage you to do is have a couple of go-to scriptures that so encapsulate the way you want to live every day that you don't need to go back to the text every day. You know, if you read through Paul's writings, and I know this sounds like I'm going off into left field, but if you read through Paul's writings, you'll see times where he tells one person or another, oh, and bring my scrolls if you come from such and such a place. Please don't forget them. What's he saying? Anybody? Oh, my Bible is over here in whatever this city is. It's there. I'm here in prison and I don't have anything. When Paul writes from prison, does he sound like a man who has no Bible in front of him? You know where it is? It's in his head. And you can actually see it in the writings because there's times when he fumbles for where to find something. There's actually times in the text where it says, and it is written somewhere. He knows it. He knows what it says, but he doesn't know exactly where to find it. Does it matter?
No, it's still truth.
Yeah, of course it is. It's still truth. It doesn't matter if you can't cite the location. And so what I want us all to have are these go-to texts that we just remember them. We remember the big ideas. I don't even care if you remember them word for word. Just remember the big ideas that they express. So we're going to turn over to Romans and we're going to look at one that might be helpful to you. Now before you can appreciate the value, I'm going to back up and I'm going to read a little bit from Romans 4 that helps set the stage for what he's going to talk about in the beginning of Romans 5. And if you have a Bible, maybe it would be worth following along. So I'm going to start reading 4th chapter, 13th verse. For the promise to Abram and his offspring that he would be heir of the world did not come through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if it is to the adherents of the law who are to be the heirs, faith is null and the promise is void. But the law brings wrath, but where there is no law, there is no transgression. So he's starting to remind his readers that being right with God is not a matter of slavish adherence to a code, but instead it is a matter of confidently trusting that what God has said you should put your trust in is worthy of putting your trust in. So think with me here. When people obeyed the law imperfectly that God had told them they needed to obey, why were they right with God? Were they right with God because they obeyed the law, or were they right with God because they trusted that God said they would be right with Him if they obeyed the law? Do you understand what I just asked?
Ask it again.
When people were instructed to obey the law and it would make them, it would keep them in right relationship with God, where was their trust supposed to be? I'll ask it this way. Where was their trust supposed to be? Was their trust supposed to be in their ability to keep the law? Or was their trust supposed to be in the fact that God told them, if you do this, you will remain in right relationship with me? Was their trust to be in their performance or still in God?
In God.
Of course it was. So nothing has changed. It's just that what Paul is saying here is now there is a new institution. Now everything has been right. Your faith simply needs to realign. But in a way it doesn't realign. Your faith is still in me. That's what God is saying. And that is why it depends on faith, in order that the promise may rest on grace and be guaranteed to all offspring. Let me jump over here to where I want to get to. And he's talking about Abraham here, and it says, in hope he believed against hope, that he should become the father of many nations, as he had been told. So shall your offspring be. And this is God talking to Abraham. So shall your offspring be. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was 100 years old, or when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb. John's already talked about this, but here is what Paul is saying. And this is the hurdle that you and I have. Every day we wake up and we see our circumstances staring us right in the face. And my circumstances suggest one thing. And in the backdrop, way back here, is what God has told me. But here's the way it works. Every day I see my circumstances here and God's promise back here. What do I see more clearly? This thing over here, my circumstances seems to overshadow everything. That it blocks what God says. But he says, what Abraham does is to put God to the forefront and circumstances to the back. And every day when I wake up, I see God and God's promises and what God has told me I can be, I can do, I should do. I see that. And my circumstances are the dimmer portion. What happens throughout the day? My circumstances become intense and they start to move to the front. What do I need to therefore do every day? I need to constantly remind myself that the life of faith means I push my circumstances to the back and I put faith in what God has told me will happen to the front. But that's conscious because my natural instinct day after day after day, so long as I live in a suit of flesh, is what? To trust my five senses and doubt what God says. Has anybody ever experienced that? Are you experiencing that right now? Will you experience that when you walk out of here? Of course you will. Just the mere fact that you've been reminded of that will give you a piece of alertness. Oh, I know what's happening now. Has God ever used what He's planted in you to remind you of what's happening in your life? And you see things in a new way? I hope that's what happens here. Okay, so that's the faith component. Now we're going to get into chapter 5, and this is where I say this is one of these nice, concise little blocks of Scripture that you can personalize. I don't want you to remember it word for word. I'd just like you to maybe make some memorable phrase out of a couple of things. But what I'd like us to do, instead of reading it the way Paul wrote it, I'd like to read it in the first person. See if this makes any impact on you. Therefore, since I have been justified by faith, I have peace with God through my Lord Jesus Christ. Through Him, I have also obtained access by faith into the grace in which I stand. What does that say to you when you read that? You right now are standing, if you choose to, in the grace, in the presence and in the grace of God. Have you ever felt outside the grace of God? Have you ever felt a twinge of worry that maybe God was angry with you? That maybe God was no longer your friend? Is that disempowering? Now, and think about this. Now put that together with what we just talked about. If you doubt that God is your friend, if you doubt that you stand in the sphere of God's grace. What's grace? Anybody? Unmerited favor. Right. It means I get what I didn't deserve. You have the privilege of calling God your dad, not because you deserve it, but because God says, I want to give you that. But if you forget that, what happens to that circumstances versus God's promises throughout the day? If you no longer believe, you stand completely in the grace and favor of God, what happens to your trust in God's promises? It starts to slip away, doesn't it? It's slow, it's subtle, but gradually throughout the day, throughout the week, it erodes. And over a period of time, your faith starts to shift from, well, what happens when you see your circumstances and don't see God's promises? Where does your faith shift? It shifts to you, because if your circumstances are bigger than God, who has to solve your circumstances? Right? When my faith in God erodes because I'm worried, I'm nervous, I'm concerned about the fact that I personally do not stand in the unmerited favor of God, then I need to wake up every day. I need to put my game face on and I need to go fix my problems. How exhausting is that when you live that out for 40, 50 years? Have you ever felt your problems were bigger than you are? The only cure for that is to remind yourself in a manageable way every day of this reality. Because, and you've heard me say this before, we leak. I put good stuff into me in the morning and it's drained out by noon. And that's why I said you want to make this rememberable. Is that a word? Memorable. That's the word I was looking for. Memorable. You want to make this memorable because throughout the day you're going to want to remind yourself of it. So let's read it quickly again and then we'll move on to the next part. Therefore, I have been justified by faith and I have peace with God through my Lord Jesus Christ. Through Him, I have also obtained access by faith into this grace in which I stand. And I rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. Not only that, but I rejoice in sufferings. Now how can that be possible? Well, if I don't think God is on my side, if I think God is angry with me, what am I likely to think that sufferings indicate? God is really angry with me. The more separation I experience from God, take it back to the garden. One single act of disobedience. What kind of response did that elicit among humans? I'm going to run and hide from God because God might be angry with me. So here I am, the one person, the one being that I really need when my problems are bigger than I am, and I'm going to run and hide from Him. Ever done that?
We'll try.
But you see, if I truly believe that every day I stand in the unmerited favor of God, then it's not like I'm happy about the fact that I'm suffering. But look at this process. First off, I'm on God's team. Right? I'm not suffering because God is angry with me. Maybe I'm suffering because God has called me to some task, some challenge. And just like Christ suffered, I may be suffering. I'm a son of God. It's not uncommon for sons of God to suffer. And that produces, knowing that our suffering produces endurance. And our endurance produces character. Now here's how this works. So I'm going to take us all to a weird scenario. Imagine that you are locked away, and we'll take one of these old time movies where you're locked away in a stone dungeon. No sanitation, no heat, no bed, and you find yourself thrown into this cold stone dungeon. You've never been there before. You've lived a life of comfort. What is a day in a stone dungeon? No heat, no running water, no bed. What does that feel like? Extremely uncomfortable. What's going through your mind the whole day? I don't know if I can make this. I'm not sure how long I can endure this. But the sun comes up the next day and you live through it a second day. What's happened by the end of the second day? See, the first day, you experience 24 hours of something that you have never in your life experienced before. Day two, you realize by the end of day two, on day one, you've experienced that already. Perseverance is simply a relationship between what you are experiencing and the amount of it that you have experienced before. So when something is new to you, it is overwhelming. But when God walks with you through the overwhelming thing over a period of time, you have more history of having endured it. So by the end of a week, what's happened? Is it any more comfortable? Of course not. Do you have any more confidence that you can survive it? Sure, because you've got 6 days of evidence that says, I can make it through this. God goes with me. I can make it through this. And that's where character comes in. Character is the growing confidence inside of me that I can rely on God and God will take me through this, and I now have a week's worth of history to prove that I can do this. And that character over time produces, what does it say? Why? God has gone with me this far. God has taken me where I need to go. God has faithfully made sure that I am able to endure a day at a time. And it is a day at a time thing. And so I can actually, over a period of time, on day one, hope seems unimaginable. The only hope you have is that the torture ends, right? But over a period of time, you can start to develop a new perspective on life. Now what I'd like us to do, what I'd like you to do, is actually mark this up somehow that you can come back to this and you can remember it in your own language, whatever that is. Because this is the kind of stuff we all go through. We doubt that we stand in God's grace. We question God's love as soon as we get into a difficult scrape. We cry frantically because we're not sure that we can get through the difficult scrape. But what if God's only way of training us to develop greater character in us is if He takes us through those things? How do I know if God is really faithful? How do you know if God is really faithful? You ever thought about that? I mean, yeah, I know the Bible says it, but... Okay? How do I know if God is faithful in trials? How do I know if God is faithful in difficult things? The only way I'm really going to know that personally, firsthand, is if I go through difficult things. If you want to experience the reality of a faithful and trustworthy God that really is trustworthy in all circumstances, you're going to have to go through some of those circumstances yourself. I know that doesn't sound very exciting. Otherwise, all of your information is secondhand. Now, secondhand information is better than no hand information, I guess. But ultimately, you want to place your trust in information, some of which you have lived through yourself. Okay. Other comments? You're debating. Yeah, say it. You can regret it later.
Movie V for Vendetta. I really like that.
Okay.
And it speaks a lot to what you talk about there. It's not an exact comparison. Nothing ever is. But I'm not going to explain the whole movie, but there's a scene in it, series of scenes where the female protagonist is kidnapped by the male protagonist, and she's weak and whatever, and she's, you know, all scared of what's going on, and the government and all that, and the guy V, she's talking to him, and she says, "I wish I was like him. I wish I was stronger." And the way he got strong was by going to a prison camp. And so he stages a kidnapping for her and puts her through a prison camp. She thinks she's been really kidnapped by the governor, but in reality he's watching over her the whole time. And what she goes through is awful. But she undergoes a transformation, and by the end of it, she is strong and she is no longer afraid and she doesn't care. She has more confidence and all that stuff, and she becomes someone new. Person she wanted to be. And because he loved her, he put her through that. Now again, it's not a perfect thing, but you wouldn't be there for someone, you know, for being though. In order for the transformation to take place, she needed to go through the transform process.
Oh, that was a keeper of a phrase. In order to be transformed, she had to be taken through the transforming process. That was good. You should write that down on something. Yeah. That was actually very good. All right. So the 10 things. before we run out of time. How you introduce these to your family, how you have these conversations, it's up to each of us to figure that out. Here's the first one. I want to make good choices throughout the day. You need to implant that in yourself every day at the beginning of the day. How many of you have made choices during the day that were just choices made on a whim without much thought to what was going to happen later? How many of you are still writing checks every month for those random decisions that you made? We want to make good choices every day. Now, you and I, with a lot more years of life experience, we can kind of start to appreciate that. Helping our kids to understand that is important. Every day, you have the opportunity to make innumerable choices. Make sure that you're going to look back at the end of the day and know that they were good choices. Remember what we said, and you can, I think it's on your page, daily actions, top of the page, daily actions form the habits which become the patterns which create the destinies which we reap. Your life, your future, your destiny, your legacy, it's all the cumulative effect of day-by-day choices. So anybody who says, well, it's just one choice on one day, well, it is, but it will have some enduring consequence, good or bad. We all need to be reminded of that. Okay. How you do that? Maybe you talk about that in the morning for 2 minutes. Okay, guys, today we want to make sure we make good choices. Maybe if you actually... Does anybody here have dinner with family occasionally? I mean, like, in the home, you know, kids around the table and all that. Okay. Maybe it would be a good time. So, what were the opportunities that you had during the day where you could choose one thing or another, and how did you choose? What helped you to choose in a certain way? Make it interesting. Make it fun. Don't make it a chore. This is not, okay, kids, we're going to sit down and read God's Word now. Like every head to be bowed, every eye closed, and I, the priest of the family, will read for you now. That's just lame. Just talk about some conversations. You know, some choices that you've made. Talk about their day and how they have had influence on their day. Here's another one. And there are some scriptures. I don't have time, I don't think, to go through some of the scriptures. If you don't like my scriptures after you've read them, that's cool. Throw them out and get your own. Just insert something in there. We each want to succeed or to be our best at something we do. Isn't that true? Don't we want to excel at something? And yet, how many times do you not do your best? And so here is a good teaching moment, both for your kids, and it's a great reminder for yourself. Andy Stanley has this great phrase. He even made it into a book. He says, choosing to cheat. The premise is that you have to decide what things you're going to give your absolute best to and invest the majority of your time in, and what things you're going to have to take shortcuts with. Because let's face it, we can't do our level best at everything. You got 5 minutes in the morning to put together some food so that you're going to eat the food while you're driving in the car because you don't have enough time to sit and eat the food. Is that the time to prepare a great breakfast? Oh no, I didn't put the seasonings on my peanut butter sandwich just right. Of course not. So what determines, what should determine what I'm going to give my best to? That's an important question, because when people challenge you to do your level best, have you ever been convicted that you didn't do your best? Of course. The answer is yes. Well, okay, I'll ask it a different way. Have I ever been convicted? Yes, of course, I have. Here's the other question. Have I ever lived under false guilt? Yes, of course, I have. So what determines what I am going to give my best to? This is not a trick question. The amount of time I have is going to determine what constitutes the criteria for best. If I only have 5 minutes, that has to be a factor. It's the best I can do in 5 minutes. But because I have control over some of my time, I could choose to make it 10 minutes and short something else, right? I could choose to take 20 minutes from some other activity and apply it to this. So as a general rule, where would I want to give my level best and invest the most time in it? The things that are going to last the longest. So let me give you a really retarded example here, okay? How many of you have a lawn to cut at times, right? You want to give your best to that? You want to give your best within reason. Why? It's going to grow back, and a week from now, you're not going to even know you did it. Let's take the same lawn. Now it's spring. And I know none of us here would be dumb enough to fertilize our lawns in the hopes that they would grow more lush and full because we hope they'll die soon. But suppose you were that guy on the block with a perfectly green lawn, the one with no dandelions, the one they show in the Home Depot commercials. You know the lawn. Which would you want to invest more care in? A once a year fertilizing of your lawn or a once a week mowing of your lawn? Well, the fertilizing is going to have an all year effect, isn't it? As a matter of fact, for the rest of the year, you're going to be able to see the spots in your lawn that you missed with the fertilizer, aren't you? But a week after you cut the grass perfectly, nip down every last blade, you're not going to be able to tell you did it. So where do we choose to invest the best of who we are? In the things that will last the longest and have the most importance. It's the investment principle. Okay. Help your kids to understand that. Sometimes we have to help ourselves to understand that because we get conflicted. Oh, I didn't do that well enough. I should have done better at that. You got family calling you, when are you going to be home from work? And you got work saying, you know, you really need to stay 2 hours longer and do this. And there's only 24 hours in the day, so every day we're faced with, comes back to number one, choices. So I need to choose how and when I'm going to give my best to something. Now, do you see how important this is? Because the guy who sets out in the morning and is not given that any thought, what's he going to do? Well, he may or he may not. But picture yourself here, okay? Boss here, wife there, 20 miles away. Boss here, you really need to stay 3 hours extra tonight. Wife there. How are you usually going to choose? According to the urgency and based on what is right in front of you. Remember what I said earlier on. Our focus and our attention follows our action. If this is right here in front of me, if I haven't made a conscious choice at the beginning of the day and at multiple times throughout the day to follow what I know is most important in my life, I'm going to choose what's right in front of me. And we all know this, right? We've all done this. Okay, next thing, we want to be supportive, helpful, and encouraged to others on our teams. What are the teams? And I'm using this kind of like huddle analogy for our family get-together. So what are the teams that each of us plays on throughout the day? Okay. Maybe you're involved in ministry. You've got family. Maybe there's something else. Maybe you're part of some volunteer organization. So you need to make a conscious choice, and this in some personal care time, you're going to say, well, who am I going to have contact with today? I'm going to see this guy at work, and maybe, well, I know I'm going to serve in this organization this evening, and I'm going to see these people. Maybe some of them are difficult people. How many of you work with difficult people? No hesitation there, right? Well, if I haven't made a conscious choice in advance as to how I'm going to set myself up to interact with them, what am I going to do? I'm just going to react in the moment. Maybe part of doing this is actually taking a few moments. I know this is really a radical idea in a Christian culture, but maybe you want to actually pray for the person in advance. I've heard that that works at times. I don't know. Okay, next thing. And remember, these are all things we're just planting these ideas in our mind to the point that as these moments in the day come up, there's already a response. I want to be encouraging. I want to be helpful. I don't want to be the jerk. I have a choice. I can either say something snarky in that moment to a team member, or I can actually say something a little encouraging. I can either be the funny guy who never adds anything of value, or I can be the one guy that calls that person aside and says, "Hey, I know you're going through something tough. I understand." All right, now, we want to be respectful, understanding, kind, and helpful to all those we interact with during the day. Now, these are just the transactionary interactions with people. And even the people that are rude to us. How many of you have ever lived with at least a moment's regret over handling a situation badly, just a transactionary situation, just because a rude teller, right? An uncourteous driver. And yet, you kind of like amped up the situation. They brought the tit, and you brought the tat that went with the tit, and so it went from tit to tat to tit to tat to tit to tat, and it's like it just accelerates, right? You ever had that on the road? Never mind, I don't want to know. Next thing, and I guess we're at five, we want to learn new things every day. What's the last new thing that you learned? What's the last new piece of wisdom that you discovered? You put your finger on it? Are you that person who is seeking new knowledge, new understanding? Let me give you a couple of thoughts, and then we're actually going to go into dig into the scripture a little bit. I heard something this week. They were doing a comparison, and this was a pretty extensive study, between the poorest people in the country and the very wealthiest. So they took a sampling of both. The bottom 5%, we'll say, and the top 5%. And what they were looking for were patterns. Was there anything that they could observe that there was such commonality in the things that the poor people did or the things that the rich people did that really singled them out? Now, there were a number of things, but one of the things that they said is that among almost all of the extremely well-to-do, they each invest... Boy, everybody's attention is worked up now. They each invested no less than half an hour a day in reading something technical that would help them to do what they do better. Now, I don't know what that means for you, but in terms of learning, what that means is this is who we're designed to be. We are designed to be learning creatures. So don't stunt your opportunity for growth. This is a choice. This is a choice that each of us makes every day. Is my mind, is my attention, is my bent or my lean going to be toward learning or toward coasting? Now maybe you're familiar with the book of Ecclesiastes. And remember Solomon, who's got all the money, all the time that a man could ever have, and he pursues happiness. Remember the book? So it starts out and he says, "I set my mind to learning." As a matter of fact, let's just turn there. It's back in Ecclesiastes. Probably worth looking at. The good news is if I talk long enough and go over budget, you won't invite me back anytime soon, so I'll be off the hook for a while. So here it is. We're going to start chapter 1, verse 16. It says, "I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. And I perceived that this also is but a striving after the wind." So here's what he says. I sought out wisdom, and I sought all kinds of wisdom. And what we're going to see, and as a matter of fact, let's turn over to the end then. This is his conclusion. Remember what he says in the beginning. I pursued wisdom, and it just made me more miserable, because the more I knew, it seemed the more unhappy I became. The more I was aware of things, the more vexed in my spirit I was, he says. And he goes on through all the other things that he tries. And he says one thing after another brings him discontent, unhappiness, dissatisfaction. And so he gets to the end of this, and you're all probably there while I get to where I need to be. Yeah. All right. Besides being wise, the preacher, and he's describing himself there, also taught the people knowledge, weighing, studying, and arranging many proverbs with great care. The preacher sought to find words of delight, and uprightly he wrote words of truth. Okay, so he says in the beginning that he sought all kinds of information and knowledge. And yet he said it vexed him, it grieved him. He didn't find any real meaning in that. But look at what he says here at the very end of the book. Besides being wise, the preacher also taught the people knowledge. So what is he starting to do with everything that he's acquired? He's starting to share it. You know, you can't give what you don't have. You can't help your kids with what you don't have. We talked earlier on about being a blessing to your team members, being an encouragement to them. You can't give the encouragement that you don't have to give. You can't give the wisdom that you don't have to give. How are you going to get it? That needs to be a conscious choice in your life. I am going to be a lifelong learner. And look at what else he says. He says, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs with great care. Do you know what he's saying? This guy over here has this piece of folk wisdom. This guy over here has this piece of wisdom. Have you ever heard common wisdom? Have you ever heard common wisdom where one piece contradicts another? You know what I'm saying? He found that too. And so he says, and so what I did was I took all of this and I, it says he weighed it. I put it on a scale. Which wisdom is actually wise, and which wisdom is foolish? Here's the interesting thing. At the end of all of this, where he says, no, pursuing wisdom, it's empty in itself. Do you know we're the beneficiaries of all this wisdom? Every time you and I turn to the book of Proverbs, we are benefiting from what he has put together. Aren't you glad he kept pursuing wisdom? I know I am. Do you want to leave your kids with a legacy of pursuing wisdom? Then start now and help them to do the same. Here's another big one. And remember, these are reminders to ourselves every day. Reminders to our kids, to our wives. We want to find and understand meaning in what we do. Have you ever questioned whether there was any real purpose to what you do? How does it feel to live your life going through the day-to-day activities of your life and thinking that all I'm doing is getting a paycheck? Does it feel almost a little demeaning? Does it rob you of some of your humanness? Steal some of your dignity, maybe? Yeah. And so every day, what this is a reminder to do is I need to look for the significance in what I'm doing. And if God has allowed me to remain in this situation, if I've been obedient to God and God has allowed me to remain in this situation, there must be some significance, there must be some meaning in this. But maybe it's up to me to prayerfully, carefully meditate on what the benefit is, what the purpose is to what I'm doing. Here's another simple one that we don't want to leave off the list. We want to leave the field uninjured if possible. In other words, I want to remind myself and my family, let's do what we do safely today. Let's do what we do carefully today. Let's not hurt ourselves. Let's not hurt anybody else. Sometimes that's a good reminder when you're driving down the road. If you're that guy that's prone to rash moments on the road. Just saying. Here's a big one, and it ties in with doing things excellently. We want to leave nothing undone that should have been done during the day. Sometimes those are small things. The word that should have been said, just the small task that should have been done. It's usually nothing grand. It's usually the small things that, I should have said that. And maybe what you'll find is, maybe it's the kind of thing that when you start to consciously think about that, you will be the guy that knows that he should have said one more thing before he left to a coworker just to build him up. Maybe you'll be the guy that turns around and walks back into the building and says that one thing. It's a very rare person who does. I don't know what it is for you, but let's make sure that when we rest our head on the pillow at night, that we can do that with peace. Instead of our head swimming with a bunch of should-haves that we really should have done. Next one, we want to find an enjoyment and joy in what we're doing. And I think that's an important reminder. That God didn't intend us to be miserable in what we do every day. And finally, and this is a really big one, we want to experience fellowship with God and with our loved ones every day. Has there been some meaningful fellowship between you and God? Moments shared in your work, in ministry, in anything throughout the day.